Hey, welcome to Cross Point this weekend. My name is Chris, one of the pastors here, and like you see right there, the Westfield campus pastor. And some of you might be watching at home, maybe you're sitting right here in the seats and you're wondering, Chris, this is not Westfield, this is Fishers. And I know you are absolutely right, but we are planting a new campus of Cross Point over in the community of Westfield, and that is going to be coming here soon. Hopefully this year, our plan is to be launching that this year, later on this fall. If you'd like more info on that, head to crosspointweb.org under Get Connected, and you can find out more about Cross Point Westfield, or shoot me an email, chris@crosspointweb.org. I'd love to talk to you about being a part of our launch team. Excited to have you guys here as we're jumping into part two of this series, leading through 2021. But before we get there, I want to pray with you guys. Let's pray. God, thank you for today. Thank you for the truth that we can find right here. God, I pray that for everyone who's watching at home or maybe driving in their cars right now, anybody who's sitting within the sound of my voice tonight, that God, that you would just encourage them, that you would bring them a moment of hope, that you would bring them a sense of peace that maybe they haven't felt for a while, God. And I pray that as we leave this place, as we turn off the TV at the end of this, God, that we would find ourselves more encouraged than when we came. We're so grateful for you, and we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, we're in part two of this series, leading through 2021. And really, in this series, what we're trying to do, what we're hoping to do, is to provide you with three essentials for navigating uncertainty. And the past several months, I mean, we'd all agree, have been challenging, really, for all of us. Whether it be financially or mentally, maybe socially, it's been challenging. But for all of us, I think we can all agree that it has been incredibly challenging relationally. And because of that, we're all trying to somewhat pick up the pieces. We're all trying to move forward in the best way that we can. But for many of us, we're also responsible for helping other people move forward. Maybe it's other members of your family. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's some employees or team members. Maybe it's fellow students or community members or neighbors or whoever it might be. Maybe you're a parent. Maybe you're a manager, business owner, executive, teacher, police officer, coach, mayor. Wherever you find yourself, people are looking to you for direction. They look to you for inspiration. They look to you for hope. And leading under normal circumstances, I think we can all agree, leading under normal circumstances, that's pretty tough, right? I mean, we can all agree this, but leading people under the circumstances we find ourselves in, that we've continued to find ourselves in, I mean, there's no manual for that. It's not for the faint of heart. And I won't tell if you won't tell, but the people that you're leading, that they probably have no idea how unprepared you are. And this isn't a shot at you. This is maybe even more a shot at me. I feel this way with my one-year-old daughter. Her name is Collins. And she's looking to me. She's looking to her mom. She's looking to us to lead her, to teach her, to shape her, to give her direction, to help her grow. And I can't speak for my wife, Hannah, but our daughter, Collins, she has no clue that honestly, I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, I have absolutely no idea. We've read some books. We've talked to some other parents. And if you're a parent, maybe you're watching at home, you are shaking your head like, yeah, they didn't send us home from the hospital with this like big manual. They just kind of like hand her off to you. And it's like, all right, good luck. I mean, we tried to stay at the hospital as long as we could. Like, they came to us on that last day. They came to us on that Sunday morning. They're like, okay, well, your time runs out at about noon. So, you know, it's about 9 a.m. So just make sure you don't want to get charged for that extra day. I mean, we have no idea what we're doing. And here's the thing that I think we all know this, but sometimes they're just not willing to admit it, is we don't have all of the answers, do we? We don't always know what to do. And sometimes it feels like maybe we're just making it up as we go along. At least I know I feel that way at times. And there's no point kidding ourselves. The people that are looking to us, they might not know this, but we don't always have all the answers. And uncertainty, check this out. Uncertainty, it makes leadership uncertain. And I know you heard that. You're watching at home. You're like, all right, Chris, I'm going to write that down. I'm never going to forget that one, right? I mean, that couldn't have been any better, right? Uncertainty, it makes leadership uncertain. It's true. But uncertainty, it's a permanent part of life. It's also a permanent part of leadership. And last week, Kurt, he helped us see that what people are looking for, what we're all looking for, is certainty. But sometimes, as a leader, it's just not possible. But certainty, when it's not an option, you can still offer them the next best thing. It's clarity. Clarity is leadership. And as leaders, we can provide clarity of what to do next and how to keep moving forward. Uncertainty is why the world needs leaders. It's why your family needs you. It's why your company needs you. It's why your community, your neighbors, it's why they need you. And so in this series, we're discussing these three essentials for leading through uncertainty and disruption. These are non-negotiables. They're always important, but in times like the ones that we find ourselves in, they're absolutely incredibly important. So last week, we kicked off with this narrative from the Old Testament, and it presented us with this big picture as it related to our role as leaders, and more importantly, our role as influencers in the world. We were reminded this, that leadership is temporary. It's a temporary stewardship, and we're all accountable for it. It's on loan. It's an opportunity and a responsibility. We don't have people, but we have a responsibility to people. The clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on your leadership. It's ticking on my leadership. I just realized that my daughter just turned 15 months. I'm starting to do the math, and it's like the clock is ticking from when she's no longer a little girl anymore. See, we all have this temporary amount of leadership. And we'll either maybe give it away or it'll just be taken from us. It's temporary because we are all temporary. And knowing that there's an expiration date to your leadership, it should inform your posture. It should inform your tone, and it should inform your humility as a leader. You see, everybody is accountable to somebody for how they steward, how they manage their influence. And if you're a Jesus follower, there's this divine component to it as well. And with that as our kind of broad context, I want to dive into the next non-negotiable for leading in these times of uncertainty. Every leader exercises authority on two different levels. On two levels. One level, it's immediately apparent. And one level becomes apparent over time. One determines the leader's influence within a very specific context. I mean, you can put it in a box. The other determines your influence or their influence way beyond that context. Immediately apparent is our positional authority, what we're going to call our positional authority. This is like a father or a mother, an owner, a boss, an executive, a police officer, a teacher, a coach. We pay attention to what these people are saying because of their position in our lives, because of their role that they play in our lives. We all get this, right? I mean, we've all lived this, right? Maybe you're like me, and maybe you're friends with some of your old high school coaches on Facebook, or maybe a teacher that you had a long time ago is someone that you still connect with somewhat regularly online, and maybe they post some strong opinion on social media. Anybody ever had this happen? I've had this happen to myself, and I see that, and these people that have had authority over my life, I see that, and I immediately think like, oh no, what do I believe about that? What do I need to believe? Because this person had authority. But then I remember, they don't have authority over my life anymore, right? I mean, we've all lived this before. And for me, I can remember when this happened in real life. I mean, my very first job that I took out of college, I was working at a church as a youth pastor in my hometown. And I can remember the day that I walked out into our common space and I saw my second grade teacher there. And so I did what you would have done. I walked right up to her and I said, "Hey, Mrs. Ludlow, it's so good to see you." And mind you, I'm like a grown man. I'm married. Like, I have a job. And I saw my second grade teacher and I said, "Mrs. Ludlow," like I was a 7-year-old kid again. I'm sure you would have done the same thing. She looked at me with this stone cold face and she said, "Chris, my name's not Mrs. Ludlow anymore. You can call me D." And I was like, "What? D? You have a name? You have a real name? Like, I don't even know what to call you anymore." And she reminded me right there and then that she had this positional authority over my life. She didn't hold that anymore. She didn't hold this influence over me. I wasn't a 7-year-old boy anymore. And the second level of authority, it has nothing to do with position. It has everything to do with influence. You see, the people who have the most influence in our lives, they often have little or perhaps no authority over our lives in the traditional sense of it. It's something that it's about their life that gives them influence in ours. They have this authority that extends beyond a title, beyond a time frame, beyond a specific context of our lives. They have what we're going to call moral authority. They have this authority because there's this alignment that they have between what they say and what they do and what they expect of themselves and what they expect of others. Moral authority is this credibility that they've earned by walking their talk. It's this alignment between who they claim to be and who they actually are. Moral authority, to put it plainly, is influence. Moral authority is influence. And when there's a difference between what someone says and what they do and what they expect of us and what they expect of themselves, what happens when there's that difference, right? I mean, we lose respect for that person. And consequently, when we lose respect for someone, they lose influence in our lives. I mean, come on, we all know this, right? I mean, we are so much more easily influenced by people that we respect, right? I mean, we're so much more easily influenced by those that we have respect for. Moral authority, it creates this respect. It makes a person respectable. It makes you respectable. It makes me respectable. And when someone lacks this moral authority, it's really hard to hear what they're saying because of who is actually saying it, right? I mean, I don't know about you. Maybe you grew up in a home where one of your parents or someone that you were close with struggled with substance abuse, or maybe struggled with a gambling habit and undermined the stability of your home. You understand this, right? I mean, it was hard for you to take their advice, not because of what they said. It was hard for you to take their discipline because of the decisions that they had made. And positional authority, it provides this person with an influence within a very specific context for a very limited time. My second grade teacher, for example, I mean, she didn't have any authority over me anymore. These people are their supervisors, old coaches, old bosses, parents, police officers. In those moments, they have that authority over you. But moral authority, it provides a person with influence in a variety of contexts for an indefinite period of time in your life. Moral authority, or maybe more clearly, the influence that comes from walking our talk, it's always important. But it's more important than ever during times of uncertainty, during times of disruption. And the Jewish scriptures, what we refer to as the Old Testament, provides us with this ringside seat to the story of this leader whose moral authority, it gave him this extraordinary influence. During this time of some really incredible instability in the nation of Israel, this time of uncertainty. So this guy, his name was Nehemiah, and Nehemiah was a man who held this position of power, this position of authority. He was the personal assistant to the king of Persia. The guy's name was Artaxerxes. Maybe you've heard that name before. And he was sent back to the Jewish homeland, and he came back to Jerusalem. He came back to rebuild the city, to rebuild the economy. More specifically, he came back to rebuild the walls that surrounded the city. Maybe you've heard part of this story before. The city, it had fallen into disrepair. It had fallen into ruin. And it was during all these seasons where the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, was sent off into exile. They were no longer there in their city. And Nehemiah, he had taken it upon himself to bring the city back to its original glory. And so he did. He went to the king, he went to his boss, and he asked him for permission to go back to Judah, to go back to Israel, go back to the homeland, and restore the walls, restore the city, restore the economy. And the king, the guy, I mean, this guy had almost unlimited power. And his personal assistant comes to him, and he's like, hey, I'm going to leave, I hope it's cool, but like, can I leave my job? And not only can I leave my job, I'm going to go home, I'm going to take a bunch of people with me, and like, if you're cool with it, will you pay for it? Like, this guy, Nehemiah, was an incredible talker. He had to be, because that's exactly what happens. The king sends him back to the homeland, gives him the title of the governor of Israel, and then he says, you know what, and not only that, I'm going to pay for all of it. Like, I'm going to pay for all of it. You've been good. Take some people, grab the people, let's get out of here, and I'll send you with some money, and you just go back and you take care of it. I mean, Nehemiah must have been an incredible communicator. But so he's not only just known for how quickly he was able to get the people of Jerusalem to rebuild this wall around their city, But he also gained this measure of influence, this moral authority in the process by working on the wall himself. But that's just one aspect of his story that I want to focus on. There's another part. See, the broken down wall, it was just one of several problems that were facing the citizens of Jerusalem. After several years, Nehemiah, he discovered something that was even worse, even more dangerous than a few gaps in the wall of the city. And it took a while for him, but he eventually realized the root cause of the city's economic despair. And here's what he found out. These wealthy landowners, these wealthy merchants from all around the city, they were loaning money to the Jewish people at these crazy interest rates. And it was causing them to go into debt. It was causing them to have to give up their farms and give up their olive groves and give up their children into slavery. And it was decimating the economy. And so when Nehemiah arrived, he used his own money to cancel their debts. He used his own money to buy these people out of this slavery, to buy back their land, to buy back their crops. And this helped to jumpstart the economy. It did incredible things for the economy. And the poor citizens of this city, they finally had some money to spend. I mean, they finally had this freedom, this opportunity to begin to move forward. But as time went by, Nehemiah discovered that there was something else happening here. And after some investigating, what he discovered was that the wealthy Jewish leaders there in the town, many of them living right there in the city, were doing the exact same thing as their neighbors outside, as the non-Jewish people that were living outside of the city. They were offering up loans to the people right there in the city, the poor people in the city, at these crazy interest rates. They were just gouging their own brothers and sisters, requiring them to put up their children, their wives, their farms, their olive groves as this collateral. And then they would foreclose on them and inflate the grain prices. And when all of this came to Nehemiah's attention, he's furious. And he writes this in somewhat like his journal. This is the book of Nehemiah. It's Nehemiah 5. Check out what he says. He says, "I got really angry when I heard their protests and complaints. After thinking it over, I called the nobles and the officials out onto the carpet. I said, 'Each one of you is gouging his brother.'" At this point, I mean, he's just not happy. And sometimes leadership, it demands that you voice your opinion loudly. He says it right here. He says, "I got really angry when I realized what was happening." Sometimes you can't just hold it all in as a leader. You have to bring things up that people don't want to talk about. He says, "I called him out onto the carpet." Sometimes it can demand you to say something that's unpopular. Nehemiah, he goes on. He says, then I called this big meeting to deal with them. I told them, "We did everything we could to buy back our Jewish brothers who had to sell themselves as slaves to the foreigners. And now you're selling these same brothers back into debt slavery. Does that mean that we're just going to have to do this all over again? Are we just going to have to buy them back again?" I mean, he had already spent this fortune buying back these Jewish citizens out of slavery from the foreigners, and now he's going to have to do the exact same thing over again, but to his own people. I mean, the story, it just gets worse here. It says, they said nothing. They said nothing. What could they say? "What you're doing is wrong," Nehemiah says. "Is there no fear of God left in you? Don't you care what the nations around here are enemies? Don't you care what they think of you?" He's like, guys, our neighbors, they're laughing at us. They're laughing at us right now. We're not even keeping our own laws. We're undermining ourselves. According to the Torah, the first five books of the Jewish scriptures, Jews, they were encouraged to loan money, especially to loan money to the poor people there in their community. But they were encouraged to do it, but to never charge interest. And yet, the wealthy Jewish people right there in the city are doing the exact opposite. Nehemiah goes on, he says, "Give back to them immediately their fields, their vineyards, their olive groves and houses, and also the interest that you were charging them." And they're like, okay, we will give it back. We'll give it back, they said. "And we will not demand anything more from them. We will do exactly what you say." But Nehemiah, he's no fool. He doesn't trust them. So he goes on. He says, "Then I summoned the priests and I made the nobles and the officials. I made them take an oath to do exactly what they had promised. And the people, it says, they did just as they promised. Just like that. I mean, doesn't this just seem unrealistic? Doesn't it seem like, okay, Chris, that's like a Disney movie. Like, of course, oh yeah, just all wrap it up in a nice, neat bow. But you'd be correct in thinking this unless you knew the backstory, right? Unless you realized why these people, when Nehemiah spoke, they listened. The reason why Nehemiah's words, the reason why they carried so much weight was the way that he had conducted himself for 12 years as the governor of Judah. His reputation, it preceded him. And not only that, but it stood in stark contrast to all of the governors that had come before him. Here's the reason why his words, they carried so much weight. When Nehemiah, when he came back to the city as the governor, he was due some perks of the job, we'll say, that all governors were due and all governors have had taken full advantage of in their time in leadership. As is the case with many leaders, it seems, when they take advantage of those perks, they sometimes step over the line a little bit. Maybe they go just a little bit for, oh, just a little bit more. I'll take just a little bit and that's okay. Like, I'm just going to step over the line just a little. And not only that, but when they do that, the people that work for the governor, they do the same thing. And this was the case, it seems, all throughout history, but not with Nehemiah. As the governor, Nehemiah, he had a legal right to collect taxes for his own personal income, plus a free allotment of food. And in his 12 years as the governor of Judah, he never once exercised those rights. Instead, he paid out of his own pocket. He says to the people that for those 12 years that he was there in the city, he never once took advantage of the system. He never took the food. He never took the wealth, the land, the extravagance, all the things that the governors before him had done exactly that. He was out on the wall, rebuilding it, working for the entire city, working for the entire people's safety and security, rebuilding their economy, buying people back from slavery. Nehemiah says, but out of reverence for God, I didn't act like that. He did what he came to do. He came to rebuild the wall and to restore the nation. He did exactly as he had said he would. And these 12 years of walking his talk, it added weight to his words. These 12 years of expecting of himself what he expected of others, it gave him influence that he wouldn't have had otherwise. The life that he had lived, the decisions that he had made, his genuine concern for the people, his lifestyle, his lack of entitlement, it brought the leaders that were there in front of him, brought them into submission. And that's good leadership. That's the kind of leader that we would all like to follow. That's the kind of leader that we should all strive to become. And it all goes back to this moral authority. It all goes back to influence. Influence, it's a tricky thing. It takes years to acquire. But it only takes one unguarded moment. It only takes one decision, one word, one late night, one extra drink, one bad decision to lose it all. That influence that took years to build can be gone in an instant. But moral authority, it's absolutely essential. It's absolutely essential, especially in these times of disruption, in these times of uncertainty. And people who look to us, they want to know that they can trust us. They want to know that they can believe in the words that we're saying, that we're going to live up to those words. Trust is earned, and trust is influence. There's this classic romantic comedy, the movie 51st Dates, and you might hear that and think, like, Chris, that's not a classic. I don't know when you decide a movie's a classic, honestly. Like, we can take a poll later. I'm not exactly sure. This movie's been out for, it seems like, a while. And so in my mind, it's a classic romantic comedy. And honestly, what happens, the premise here in this movie, we see this influence over and over and over again. You see, Adam Sandler, he's fallen in love with this woman, Drew Barrymore, and she had been in this car accident, leaving her with amnesia. And spoiler alert, but like it's been out a long time. So if you haven't seen it, like that's on you. But in order to win over her heart, he had to win over her entire family. Because they were protecting her. I mean, they had to be her eyes and her ears, because every day she would wake up not remembering the day before. And so he sets out to win her heart and to win their hearts. And he does this incredible thing. He builds influence over time, steadily. Check this out.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Stewart
was in New York today to face Garden.
Oh, God.
I think it's on. Go, go.
Aloha, I'm Henry Rock. We met here at the Pukilau Cafe about a year after your accident. I like you and you like me, most days. Every day is different, but basically this is what happens, Lucy.
Kiki Koloko, take the camera.
Okay, I got it, Dad.
Don't drop it.
Okay, all right, here we are, right here. The part of you in this reenactment will be played by my good friend Ula.
Aloha. Sorry about your brain. I had an accident too, believe it or not. This is my good eye.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hi, I like that waffle teepee that you have built.
Oh, so nice of you to notice. Please, sit down.
I would love to. My name is Henry, by the way.
My name is Lucy.
Smell my fingers?
Ooh, fish, right on.
I know you wish I was making all this stuff up. I wish I was too. But the good news is there's so many people out there who care about you, your dad and Doug, and a couple of your friends here at the Hukila who have a message for you.
Lucy, as you know, your mother and I were best friends. That's why I promised her that I would always help look after you. Sometimes life isn't very fair. But we still have you. Oh, and if you were wondering about this guy who's making this tape, he's okay.
Hey, Lucy. Just so you know, since you lost your memory, I became governor of Hawaii. Nah, just kidding. I'm too smart.
Yeah! Waraliku, get your brother out of the dishwasher.
So whenever you're ready, we'd all love to talk to you and answer any questions you have. And you're the best, Lucy. Aloha.
How many times have I watched this?
This is the first time.
See, trust is earned. Trust is earned over time, and influence is earned over time. To bring this into sharp and maybe perhaps uncomfortable focus, I want you to think about this. You don't respect your parents because of what they required you to do, do you? Your respect, or maybe your lack of respect, is determined by what they required of themselves and the life that they lived. The same is true for you. The same is true for me. You see, our lives, they speak louder than our words. We've all heard this, right? Our actions speak louder than words, but it's true. Your life, it's speaking louder than just the things that you say. Our lives, they add weight. They add weight to our words. And with that in mind, I want to give you three gauges that you can begin to monitor. Three ideas, three things that you can begin to look at right now and continue to look at in your leadership. Continue to go back to and keep your eye on as a way to protect your influence, as a way to protect your moral authority. And these are actually part of your next steps for this weekend. If you want to take this a step further, I want to encourage you, maybe take some time and do some self-reflection over these three gauges we're going to look at here. Maybe dig a little bit deeper. Grab a journal. Maybe write down some of your thoughts as we look at these three self-awareness gauges. And these are three areas that indicate that you may be on the verge of losing what is virtually impossible to regain once it's gone. The first one is this: to pay attention to your response to authority. How do you respond to authority? How do you respond internally? How do you respond externally? A lot of people have lost their influence by how they responded inappropriately to authority. If you consider yourself too important to be under, then you're probably too immature to be over. The second one is this: to pay attention to your sense of entitlement. Your sense of entitlement. I want you to listen to the excuses that you make to justify a behavior. Justify a behavior that you would not approve of in anyone else. Just imagine someone saying, someone doing what you're thinking about saying or doing. You see, that has stopped me in my tracks many times. I can't even remember. I mean, to look at someone that you respect and to think of them saying those words, to think of them uttering those things, to having those thoughts, to thinking of doing a thing. I mean, check out what author and Christian financial advisor Ron Blue says. He says this. He says, never do anything that you wouldn't want people to find out about or that you wouldn't want to have to stand up and explain. Now, when you heard me say Christian financial advisor, you might have had a funny taste in your mouth. And to be honest, like, I don't like throwing the adjective Christian in front of everything and making it feel like, oh, it's reputable, it's trustworthy. But for Blue, for this guy, Ron Blue, maybe you've heard this name. They have an office right here. I mean, over years and years and years of trust and influence, his business has been built up because of it, because of this principle. And entitlement, it's a slippery slope. And maybe you do deserve it, whatever it is. Nehemiah, he certainly deserved it. But if taking what you deserve, if it undermines your influence, I want you to think twice about it. Because the odds are, whatever it is, whatever it is that you think that you deserve, the day might come when you'd be willing to return it in order to get back the influence that you've lost. And one last one I want you to pay attention to. It's your imaginary conversations. Like the conversations you have between your ears. If your anger and your frustration with people, if it leaks once, you could lose credibility forever. I'm sorry, it doesn't erase anyone's memory. But when you do mess up, I want you to quickly fess up. Own it. It's the only way to rebuild your influence. We all trust people who've made mistakes, right? We don't often trust people who make excuses. We don't trust them because we know that they only have their best interest in mind. All right, I want to go one step further with this. Maybe you're already playing in on writing these down, maybe taking some notes personally, digging into this. I want to take this just a little bit further. Maybe you're looking for some exponential growth out of this. I want you to maybe grab a close friend this week and dig in a little bit further. I want you to jump on Zoom, jump into a FaceTime with them and chat through these three self-awareness gauges. There are some discussing questions you can find in the Crosspoint app under this weekend that'll help you dig in just a little bit further on this. Moral authority, influence. It's essential. It's essential during times of disruption and uncertainty. It's an essential in the season that our world continues to find itself in. And to be clear, moral authority, it's not really essential for leadership. You can lead without it. You can parent without it. You can manage people without it. But you can't be a leader worth following without it. You won't maintain your influence. Remember, people, they are usually defined by their final chapter, not their finest chapter. And here's the thing, God has given you a sphere of influence. And it's not for your benefit, it's for the benefit of other people. Someone needs your voice. Someone needs your example. So steward it well. Protect your influence at all costs. After all, your influence, it's your opportunity to make the world a better place. Your accomplishments, they'll make your name known, sure. But your character and your influence will determine what people will associate with that name. And so guard it. Guard it at all costs. Would you stand with me as we close today? We're going to sing a song that we've sang many times over the last several months. And it's one that every time I hear these lyrics, I'm encouraged. I'm filled with hope. I'm reminded that I'm not walking this path of leadership alone. And as we sing this last song, I want you to breathe in the truth of these words. And I want you to know, I want you to believe that you're capable of doing this. That you're capable of leading well in 2021. That you are capable of pushing past, far past where you thought you could go.